Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have Rob Cameron, who is an architect evangelist in the Atlanta, Georgia area, principally focused on Windows Phone adoption, and Rob is also an author. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Jesse?
Good, and glad to have you on, and glad to get a chance to talk with you. I've been reading your book for quite some while as I'm writing my book and stealing mercilessly from your ideas.
So hey, sounds good.
And your book is terrific, and we should definitely talk about that. But let's start with what an architect evangelist does.
Sure. So architect evangelist is the best job in the world, in my opinion. So what I get to do is I get to work with, I particularly work with a lot of major media and entertainment customers. So it's a fun customer base to work with as well, but a challenging one. And I help them port their, iOS and Android applications over to Windows Phone. You know, we try to bring over all the features and maybe add one or two features that are unique to Windows Phone. And so I'll work with the partner who is going to build the app, and I'll work with the media and entertainment customer as well.
And you're in the office with them, helping them sort out the application they're trying to build, or you're on the phone, or how does that work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It's amazing how much in today's world you can get done remotely. So the majority of my time is not on site, although I'm happy to go on site, and I do end up traveling a decent amount, but primarily that's usually for like conferences or those types of things, and then I'll do customer visits as well. But much of it is working remotely and over the phone and email. For the vast majority of my customers, haven't actually met them in person, but we get to know each other. We work together, and when we do get together, we'll grab a beer and celebrate delivery of an application. So it's pretty fun.
It does sound like fun. When you go to conferences, is that mostly networking, or are you also presenting at the conferences?
Yeah, sometimes I always try to, maximize my time. So I try to always present. At the very least, I'll do booth duty. So I hang out at like CTIA, or last year I got to go to Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, which was a lot of fun. Next week, I'm heading out to Madrid, Spain to speak at a Nokia Microsoft event, subbing for we have a guy in the UK who usually does it, but he couldn't make that one. So try to present, do booth duty, and generally just meet folks and kind of help point them in the right direction.
I didn't realize that Madrid was right next to Atlanta. I wasn't quite aware of that.
When you live in the main hub with Delta down here in Atlanta, it feels like you're next to everything. So
I believe that. Atlanta is a fascinating city to me because when you're in Atlanta, you're in an incredibly metropolitan city, a very modern city, very hip, very lots of, people from everywhere. And then you drive 20 minutes and you're in the South. And it's just a total mind shift as you go, a short distance out of the city.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true. You, a lot of transplants down. I'm one of them for sure. I grew up in Philadelphia, but lived all over for quite a while there, and then settled down in Atlanta. And it is amazing. You rarely hear a Southern accent when you're down here in Metro Atlanta. That's pretty much true.
it's my experience. Although, as I say, you don't have to go far. You have a fascinating resume. We were talking about this right before we got started, that you have been at Microsoft for, do I have it right, 10 years? And
yep.
Before that, 10 years in the U.S. Navy.
Yep, I have a pretty short resume. Graduated Annapolis and then was in active duty for 10 years. And, peace dividend, thought it was all over. It was kind of a computer-oriented guy, did some independent consulting when I was in the Navy just to keep keep up with the technology. And I decided to exit the Navy after 10 years. And at the time, everybody was joining dot-coms. And I had already worked at a dot-com part-time as an independent consultant and kind of realized that that wasn't for me. So I just submitted my resume to Microsoft on the website, and everybody was going to .com, so it was great. They actually called me, which is hard. Doesn't happen very often, but I think it was a function of the time frame. So I joined Microsoft, and at Microsoft I've had two roles. I worked in Premier Support, which is like it's like a dev consultant in support, and so you kind of help help be proactive and help customers do the right thing. And then if their code's not working. Usually it's a matter of just, you know, helping them go through their code and find all the places where they should call dispose in .NET, and now they usually get their websites running up pretty well again. And then about 4 years ago, I switched over to DPE, which is my current role as an architect evangelist.
And DPE is the evangelist group that has two parts, as we've had some folks on before from corporate DPE who are essentially centralized in Redmond, and field DPE, which is what you do. You're out in a particular area. Do you, how large an area do you cover?
Exactly. Yeah. Up until, you know, Microsoft, our fiscal year starts in July. So up until this past July, kind of covered nationally for communication sector, which was meet and entertainment customers, so West Coast and East Coast, hence, you know, quite a bit of travel. Now, going forward, more focused on the Eastern Seaboard, you know, up in the East region kind of area is where I'll try to primarily roam.
Okay, let me switch subjects on you, if you don't mind. And
sure.
You have a book out, really an excellent book, Professional Windows Phone 7 Development. That's an A-Press book. And I know that this book was written before Windows 7.5, codename Mango. And so are you in the process of updating that to be ready for Mango?
I am. I'm in the process of updating that. And, you know, I told the publisher, A-Press, I'm like, yeah, you know, we should be able to, you know, get through this. This was kind of before the entire dev story was unveiled. And I tell you, the more I dig into it, I'm finding I've already had to add a couple chapters, and pretty much all the chapters are going from, you know, 70 pages to 90 pages. I mean, there's just so much to cover in Mango that it's making it a bigger effort than I expected. But yep, I'm in the process of updating it, and it should be published in the winter, hopefully early winter, but I'm just going to say winter for now.
Let's talk about some of those new features. What do you see as the principal new features in Mango?
Sure. So there are a lot of very exciting features in within Mango. I would say probably one of the biggest features is the ability to do background processing. As a developer, you can have basically an agent that you can run. It can run as a periodic task, and you can also run it as a resource intensive task when you're on battery. And it essentially lets you, you know, do things in the background that you know, while your app's not running, so you can update tiles, and which is probably the next thing I would talk about is the live tiles that are available in Windows Phone. So with Windows Phone 7, you could have like a primary tile, you just have one tile for your application. And, you know, you could update it two ways, but it involved, you know, invoking a remote service call, one with push notifications and then one with the shell tile API. But with Mango, you can now update your tile from your application's background agent that can run every 30 minutes. And then you can also update it with push notifications as well. But you could also have multiple live tiles. And if you have a secondary live tile, so yeah, you can, you know, maybe you can pin, if you're a news app, you can pin a topic or whatever. You can deep link into your application. So it just really helps you expose more of your application to the end user and let them, if it's a sports app, as an example, you know, pin your favorite football team.
And let's just explain that deep linking idea is that your secondary tile does not have to go to your primary page, but can go deeper into the application to a specific page or a specific area based on the information that was pushed to that tile.
Absolutely. So in my example where, say, you're a sports application and you cover, you know, NFL, me being a Philly guy, love the Eagles, although they didn't do too well on Sunday. You know, you could pin the Eagles, say, to your start screen, and from the background agent, you could update the headline on the front of the tile, and then for free, you get this tile flip, and then you can put like a new image on the backside of the tile. So it really gives you a nice interactive way of kind of pulling in the user where you're on your start screen, and all of a sudden you see your favorites, you know, whether it's a sports team or a particular news topic, you have the ability to deep link right in there.
Right. Now I'm going to take you back to multitasking. You
sure.
Started talking about the ability to set up multitasking and to set up background agents and Of course, there's also now reminders, which allow you to set an alarm and multitasking as far as audio goes. Can you tell us a little bit about the audio multitasking capabilities?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, like I said, I like to work, I've worked with, and I still work with a lot of the media and entertainment customers. And so for, you know, a partner who is a radio station on the internet, they can now have a background audio agent. And, you know, as the name suggests, you can, it'll let you play audio in the background while you're doing other apps or, you know, in Outlook on your phone or whatnot. But what's really nice about it is that it has fully integrated to the audio experience. So if you've ever played music on using the Zune service on your Windows Phone 7 device, and if the music's playing and you're on your lock screen, you can hit your volume and you get a little pop-up for the volume control. The background audio agent allows your application to integrate into that mini player, so to speak, and so that you can adjust your volume and skip songs just like you can with the built-in music experience. It really makes your background audio application a first-class citizen on the platform.
Great. What's the next big addition that comes with Mango?
Sure. So besides the multitasking and live tile, you mentioned some of them, just like deeper phone integration, like the ability to do reminders. You can also do Toast from your application. Previously, you had to do Toast with push notifications, but now with background agents, you can do Toast from their background agent or from, you know, so that it'll pop and notify the user something interesting that they might want to know about. You can also do reminders, as you mentioned. We can also integrate with the calendar and contacts, where you can gain access to those sort of data stores on the phone, which really enables a whole new set of applications that before just really couldn't be ported over to Windows Phone. So I'd say another major feature on Mango is the additional access to new sensors. So for Windows Phone devices, many of the Windows Phone devices at RTM included a Compass, but there was no API to access the Compass. And so with Mango, you now have API that lets you access and manipulate the Compass sensor. And there's also support for gyroscope. So if you get a new Windows Phone device that's kind of ships with Mango, at retail, then the new Mango devices have gyroscope, which if you're a developer, that might sound, oh, that's a bummer. So even if I write, you know, a gyroscope application, and it's only going to work on Mango hardware, so why bother? But that's actually not the case. What Microsoft has done is that they've created this sort of virtual sensor called the motion sensor. And with the motion sensor, it abstracts the gyro and the compass and the accelerometer to present you with a nice, clean API for getting motion information off the phone. And the motion sensor it still works with Windows Phone 7 devices that are RTM or don't have a gyro. And it runs a little bit degraded. It uses the accelerometer, does all the hard math and integrals to kind of give a rough approximation of, you know, a gyroscope sensor, but it's still pretty good. Like I've tested motion sensor enabled applications on both devices that have a gyro and don't, and it's a little bit more steady with the gyroscope, but it's still very usable on the RTM devices.
Yes, and what's nice is you can write to that single motion API, and which is very straightforward, and with that you can then use the same set of code for both devices, both the devices that have the gyroscope and those that don't.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a brilliant move, actually, when you think about it, to allow the platform to evolve forward but not lose existing users, you know, the existing base because it happens to not have a sensor.
Talk to us also about some of the changes in handling data in Mango. There have been some significant advances there as well.
Absolutely. In fact, I just added that to one of my chapters in my book, is local database support. Yeah, that certainly could be an entire chapter itself, and it ended up being, you know, 20 or 30 pages all as just that addition alone. So local database support is pretty exciting. What local database support provides is, you know, as it says, a database to bring on Windows Phone. You can create the database programmatically, so you can kind of write it in code. And what you can do is you can build an application that does data load and loads up a database. And there's this new tool, which is was definitely needed, and it was a great thing to add to the platform. It was the isolated storage tool. And what that tool does is the command line tool that'll let you copy the isolated storage contents from isolated storage to your PC. So when your application creates the database, you can pull it off of your phone. You can pull the whole file system off your phone for a particular application, and you can inspect it. It's like another way to do QA and troubleshooting and debugging for a file, you know, resource intensive application. But you can also use it to grab a local database that you populate, and then you can take that database and add it to your primary application as sort of a pre-populated database. And so you kind of have two ways of using the local database. You can, you know, create it on the fly. So maybe your application is like a to-do list application, and it's an empty database with just a schema that you create. And then as the user enters to-do tasks, you start filling up the database, or you can pre-populate it with data and then just ship that database with your application, and you can access that database as a read-only database, or you can copy it to isolated storage and make it a read-write database.
Now, if you wanted a pre-populated database for your application, what would be involved in doing that? How would you do the pre-population?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the way in the MSDN documentation suggests is that you create like a helper application, and in that helper application, you create the schema for the database, you call the web APIs, or maybe you just set up a dummy web API on your local IIS server on your desktop, and have that server sort of feed the data, and then your helper application will pull in that data and then populate the database for you. Now, I've kind of played around with it a little bit, and as far as I can tell, the database on the Windows Phone OS 7.1 creates is a SQL Compact 3.5 database. So I pulled the database off with the isolated storage tool, and I opened it up in Visual Studio as a 3.5 database. And then I added some data to it directly using the Visual Studio kind of server manager. And then I copied that database over to another application and deployed it as like a pre-populated database, and it worked fine.
But what you're saying is that you can go to an existing database, an existing SQL CE 3.5 database, open up this command line tool, and import that into an existing Windows Phone application.
Yes. Yeah, that is one of the options of the local database, is to ship a pre-populated database. And so to pre-populate it, you have to create a helper Windows Phone Mango application and have that Windows Phone Mango application sort of run in the emulator and access your data services and then pull them into the database. So you kind of have to do this thing where you create an app that the sole purpose of that app is to populate the database. And that's what the documentation on MSDN suggests as the way to pre-populate the database. Now, I did some experimenting myself, and from hacking around with it, I found that if you created a SQL Compact 3.5 version of, you know, SQL Compact 3.5 edition database, and you populate that whether with, you know, a WPF application or WinForms app or using the Visual Studio Server Explorer, and then copy that into a Windows Phone OS 7.1 Mango application, it seemed to work fine that way as well.
Well, that's going to increase flexibility tremendously, the ability to pre-populate a database and then import that into a Windows Phone application means that you can ship that application with a set of data that can then be served depending on user interaction.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're, let's say you're building an application that has a large data set, like a Subway, you know, a Subway application where you're kind of tracking all the different subway lines, or an astronomy application. You know, we now have the motion sensor, and we have the camera is now also, it's another sensor, the camera API that you can take advantage of. So, you know, you can kind of do the thing where you point the phone to the sky and it kind of tells you where the constellations are. I mean, just kind of storing all that you know, data that's just read-only, yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's a nice advantage.
When you go and talk with your customers about Mango and upgrading to Mango, what are the key features that you emphasize that we haven't discussed yet?
Let me just go through the list real quick. So live tiles, which we already discussed, background processing and updating those tiles, which again we covered. And then the other one I talk about is App Connect, which is like it's a new API that lets you integrate. Well, it's a new API that lets you make your application available as part of Bing Search. So on the phone, you have this hardware button for Bing Search. It's certainly one of my favorite applications, and it only gets better in Mango. It has a lot of additional capabilities. But as an application developer, what you can do with the App Connect is you can register for, you could call them, they're called cards, but essentially they're meta search strings. So they could be like Bing, places, sports, and recreation. So let's say you have an application that talks about where all the parks, the green space, where the green space in a particular in cities across the U.S. Right. So I'm in a city, I want a park. This is the, you know, so I do a quick search and I search for, you know, state parks in using the Bing search functionality. So you're not inside of an application. You click the Bing search button, you enter state parks. What will happen is the application that's registered for that particular meta search tag, like Bing places, recreation and sports. Let's say that if you search for state parks that it sort of maps to that meta search term. What the phone will do is it will retrieve as part of the search results applications that are sort of related to that search. And so the application that maybe has all this great information on green space or parks in a major city will be part of the search results, even if the application is not installed on the phone itself. So it's a great way for third-party developers to sort of make their app known via the Bing search functionality.